This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details. Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
That's right, I'm literally Mark Dolan. This is FUBAR Radio and Mark Dolan Eats the News, in which over the next hour, myself and two luminaries from the world of media and showbiz will be casting a satirical but then reassuringly neutral eye on the week's big stories. Focusing and majoring on the neutral is the blog's editor of the iconic Huffington Post, and it's Jodie Thompson. Welcome back to your spiritual home, which is FUBAR Radio.
Yes, and my spiritual home in this seat on the left in particular.
Well, it's known... It's a bit like, you know, in the pub when there's a stool and it's like, that's Dave's stool.
Yeah.
That's very much your stool here at FUBAR.
Please don't talk about my stool live on air.
Yes, it's a bit early for that, isn't it? Can I apologise if you're eating your lunch? Now, we're also going to sink our teeth into a very, very funny comedian, a close showbiz pal of mine, Tiernan Dewey. Welcome back to FUBAR
Thanks
Radio.
Thanks very much, and please don't sink your teeth into me. That sounds painful. And
but you're just... If I could eat you, I would. Do you know what I mean? You're just... There's something a bit delicious about you.
I mean, I won't
you.
Lie, Mark. That is both a compliment and quite terrifying.
It is a bit. Correct. If you find out the contents of the patio in my garden, you'd definitely be concerned. Now, it's been a big week. So much to talk about. Brexit rages on. We've got increased tensions in Syria. We've got Russia not winning the Eurovision Song Contest, which means they're almost certainly going to go nuclear now. But I think the biggest story of the week is about how large numbers of people are buying lots of different sizes and colours of items online, choosing which one they think suits them best, and then sending the rest back, which is costing retail giants billions. Jodie, have you ever been guilty of such an act?
No, I haven't, actually. I'm very specific because I know exactly what I like, and I know generally exactly what size I am. And what my main moan is, companies keep changing the blooming sizes or the quality or the material, and suddenly they will stop doing things as well. For the jeans I'm wearing now, Gap have stopped doing them.
No.
This is the fourth pair of jeans I've had. I would be quite Terrible. Happy just to order 1969 real straight in black.
Wait, let me write this down.
They don't do it anymore.
It's so disgraceful. Now, you shouldn't have told me this, because this Tiernan is feeding the monster that is me. Because the way in which I'm OCD is that if I find a pair of jeans that I like, I'm convinced that they'll immediately go out of production and I'll buy like three pairs.
I've always thought that there should be a service, and I think it's probably specifically for men, that's a terrible generalisation, but I think just once a year they send you the same pair of jeans you bought last year, maybe with an added extra inch around the waist, just in case as you get older.
But that's all I want.
I just want the same pair of jeans every year until they wear out, and the same with trainers. Actually, I'd be really happy with the same pair of trainers. I'm very unfussy.
So maybe it's a guy thing that we don't really. I mean, that's correct. I could settle on one outfit for the rest of my life. Steve Jobs, the icon that is Steve Jobs, he really enjoyed the denim plus black polo, and then Nike trainers was his thing, and then the kind of Swedish type glasses. You know, those
very
sort of
geography
Lindbergh sort of glasses. Yeah, and had a very cropped haircut. Anyway, he loved those sweaters, and it was a Japanese designer. And he said, I love this sweater. I want you to make me 30. So he just had a drawer full of the same black sweater, which I think would make life a lot easier if it was like North Korea and we all just wear the same clothes every day.
My only worry would be, how would you know which ones were washed and which ones weren't? Well, like a lot of my clothes are just gathered in the same area of my bedroom.
If you've ever been physically near me, you'll know that's not a concern.
Sure, Mark.
This T-shirt is currently humming. In fact, it's been so long since it was washed.
It'll have it on the other side of the room from
Correct.
Me.
It's actually currently winking at Jodie. But do you know what? It's a really interesting thing, which is that online shopping is now, it's taken over. The big problem with it is that you couldn't have a tactile experience with the product and you couldn't try it on. So our canny consumers, and I must say, I have been guilty of this. Next is an unbelievable retailer. Have you ever purchased from Next online?
It's so complicated.
Oh my God. But I think it's very good though.
In what way?
Well, first of all, if you've got an issue, their call centre has reached a new level. First of all, their call centre is open till midnight. Now, I mean, that's keen, isn't it?
Mark, can I just check,
really
are
want
you
your
being
money?
Sponsored by Next?
Yes, I am. Right. My dad is Peter Next, who started the business. But you know, I've got to... you know what? I'm one of these weird people. You've got to remind yourself how weird I am, Tiernan. You've known me for a few years now. If there's a company that delivers for me, I become obsessed. I'm like a complete cheerleader. So what they do is they close at 12. If you've got a problem and you call, and they've got this thing where they say, please hold. And you know how they say you're like 11th in line to, you know, be spoken to by someone in Malaysia. Well, what they do next is they go, we'll be with you in 15 seconds. So, like, they're open till midnight. We'll be with you in 50. They've got it down to the second. That's how busy they think I am, which I'm obviously not. But the other thing that they do is you've got this thing where if you order by midnight, it's like in your house the next morning. It's nearly like, it's like Father Christmas, basically. That's what next is now, Father Christmas. So what I did is I bought 4 pairs of jeans. 2 of them were great. 2 of them, not so much. I took the other 2 back. At some point, will I be guilty of a crime and could I be punished?
And that's why there's no more next on Oxford Street.
I know. I must say, when I saw them boarding it up, I did feel a pang of guilt.
It's you. It's entirely you.
What do you think? I mean, joking morally, am I going to hell for that, Jodie?
No, you're not. And I do blame, as I say, the shops, because now I'm going to have to do the same thing. Because jean shopping, as any woman knows, is the worst shopping next to bra shopping. So I'm going to have
Because denim is an unforgiving material, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, we're all different sizes and shapes. And I'm going to have to order loads and loads of pairs because I've got no idea now what's going to fit me.
Right.
And only one will be kept. So, sorry, Gap, you're your own worst enemy.
I must say, it is. I can see why people are doing this as well, because also home is the best place to look rationally at clothes.
And, yeah, you
Because I mean the number of times I've come home with bags of... And let's be honest, shit that I didn't need, that didn't fit, that was the wrong colour. But because I'm in, like, the West End and I've had 11 coffees, and it's, you know what I mean? I'm just like, these are, this sort of pink, orange, skinny jean sort of onesie is really, like, it really suits me, you know? And it's just, it's not rational. Whereas I wonder, Tina, whether one is a bit more rational at home.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I have the added bonus of my girlfriend going, no, that looks terrible, if I'm at home.
Right,
whereas
exactly.
Whereas if I'm out and about by myself, I just assume everything looks terrible, and therefore don't buy anything. So, yeah, it's, I think it's definitely a safer place.
And also, let's be honest, the retailers are clever now because there's so much uplighting and backlighting. I mean, the changing rooms at Zara, it's, you walk in there, it's like the Crystal Maze. It's so dark.
But then you see, I think it's quite good.
You get a silhouette of yourself. And I can still see the acne, but I'm like, I like those
but
trousers.
But then that's quite good for us comedians, because you kind of go, well, this would look good in a spotlight. It just won't look good on the day-to-day rest of my life.
Yeah, that's a good. So, do you have a different stage outfit, by the way?
No, I just use my nicest clothes for stage. I tend to wear worse clothes
and
when,
there was
when I haven't got a gig.
Yeah. Imagining a gold lamé suit.
That's what I was hoping. I think it's
that's
a matter of time.
That's what I should do. This is what I've been missing.
I think when Dewey Ebb winds up at the O2, which is, let's be honest, just a matter of time.
I mean, I'm seeing a gig there, I think, at the end of the year. So does that count? Is that...
You're sitting here doing what?
I said, I think I've got... I'm seeing a gig there at the end of the year. Does that count?
Oh, yeah. No, listen, I would take that.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, I've been to the OT before. Just I was in a seat watching someone else, so...
Let's be honest, we're never going to go back now. You won't roll back the clock on this one. We're online shoppers. That's it now. And the first retailer that says, sorry, you can't take stuff back, that's just not going to work, is it?
It's just not going to happen. It's not legally, it can't happen. They're just going to have to try and either take back some of the costs within the pricing, or they're just going to have to sort it out. But also, stop discontinuing things, stop changing sizing.
No, I do know what you mean about the changing in size, and the supermarkets do too with the aisles where you get, you know exactly where the eggs
they
are.
They do that deliberately, though.
Yeah.
To
and
make
that's
you buy
not,
more.
That's what I do in my stand-up show, is I move all the old bits of material around. So people are like,
so
why isn't he doing
set?
His wife show jokes? And then, don't worry, they'll be coming. They're coming. They're on their way. Tiernan, you are, by the way, our foremost comedian. Do you want to tell us where you're performing at the moment? How can people be part of the sort of Tiernan fun machine?
I like the Tiernan fun machine. That's what I should call my website. How I should start my gigs as well. I'm performing all over the place. I've got a really nice gig in Lichfield this Friday, if you're out there listening in Lichfield. Come along.
Love
to that.
It.
But yeah, generally all over the place. You have to be able to spell my name, which is the nightmare.
Correct.
It's Tiernan Duyeb. Throw a load of vowels into Google. It does the rest.
I think if you were called Richard Smith, I think you'd be in Vegas now.
I think that's exactly what it is, isn't it?
You'd be sitting
well.
on a bed of money.
That's, I mean, that, and that's the dream. Maybe I should change gold lamé suit, change my name to Richard Smith.
No, but you see, but once people click with Tin and Dewey Ebb, then bang, away
that's it.
You go.
Once you know it, it's all right. And the main thing I'd like to plug is I do a weekly podcast called The Partly Political Broadcast,
which is, I must say, outstanding. Which I say through gritted teeth, and it is a great title. It can be heard on the iTunes, which is an Apple platform.
It is indeed, and also elsewhere. Via my website, if you can spell my name.
And you have to pass with what's known in the business as no money. Is that right?
Yeah.
It's just a gift from... You're a little bit like Oprah Winfrey, aren't you? You just...
Pretty much exactly the same, Mark.
You just want to make the world a better place. You're like, I've got this thing, I just want you to have it.
I think that's the best analogy anyone's... I mean, I think that's what I'd put on my next Edinburgh poster. Tina D are pretty much Oprah Winfrey.
Basically. A white male Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I definitely don't have the features that define her... have defined her entire career, but other than that, I'm pretty much exactly the same.
You know, Oprah, as this anecdote sort of reflects what a nice person she is, but also in a sense what a monster she is, which is that whenever she reads a book she likes, she sends a copy to 1,000 of her best friends.
Wow.
Yeah, she's like, I love that book, I've got it, all my besties, all 1,000 of them have better have a copy of this.
So that's the resurgence Oprah. In Waterstone's fortunes then, is it?
Yeah, well, that sorts Waterstone's out big time. Now you are listening, speaking of sorting out, to Mark Dolan Eats News. We're sorting out the big stories of the week. We'll be back in precisely 6 seconds after this guy tells you what it is you're listening to.
Mark Dolan Eats the News on FUBAR Radio.
Right, now let's get down to a bit of politics, actually. First of all, this is politics and it's also broadcasting and it's the BBC. Now, the sort of, I suppose, viral moment of the week. What do you call, because at Huffington Post, Jodie Thompson, mm-hmm. you're the expert on all things online and internet.
Yes.
A viral is probably a video.
No, it can be anything online.
Can
any
it?
Kind of content, it can be a meme, mem, however you want to say that.
Yeah.
A video, blog post, a news piece. It can be any kind of content
online. So let's say that the story around the BBC Good Food website, mm-hmm. Which the public got behind and it really caught fire. Was that a viral?
It's not actually the BBC Good Food website. It's the BBC Food website. The Good Food
blimey.
Website actually belongs to BBC Worldwide, which is the commercial arm.
Oh, crumbs.
And they're going to be moving over the recipes from BBC Food to BBC Good Food.
I go, oh, you know what? You should be a journalist.
Do you think?
Yeah, you've really got your facts together.
Can I just check? Is the food is only the food on the Good Food website good food then? Is the food on the other website just food? Like, is it just, you know, a bag of grains or?
Well, I think it is just because of the magazine. That was the initial.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
I know what you mean. That you're right
title,
to raise that.
But yes. Good
because
point.
That is a bit like when you go to the restaurant and then there are these specials and you're like, well, are you saying?
The rest of the food's not special in any way. Yeah.
The one in the menu, they're like, we're just phoning this in.
Yeah. I want all my food to be special.
Or, here's the flip side, because I'm naturally pessimistic, which is, do you look at the specials and go, they haven't got the hang of those?
I just think it's about to go off and they need to get rid of them.
Do you know what I mean? There's been, yeah, there's a surplus of lamb shank and we need to shift this pretty sharpish.
So it's special in a derogatory way.
No. In a way, it's the ultimate. I suppose whether you eat the specials and you think of it as a good thing, it's kind of the new glass is half full or half empty. I suspect. however, we love our food, and I mean the Brits. Since Bake Off and the rise of the television celebrity chef, you know, cooking is like it's more than just an eating thing now. It's recreational. It's a lifestyle choice. It's part of our. It's part of like. Our popular culture, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the very suggestion that we wouldn't have access to that very reliable database of BBC food recipes is going. I mean, I see bad news stories all the time, but when I heard that, I nearly dropped my cup of tea.
Mm. I mean, yeah, I've been there to try and find out the best recipe for roast potatoes, that's for sure.
There's something, I feel like the BBC, so is it the one that was under threat, BBC Food or BBC
yes,
Good Food?
BBC Food.
I found the BBC Food website was like a sort of surly auntie who just knows you're a bit stupid and have no gift in the kitchen, so gives it to you very, like, you really should be more complicated than this, but I'm going to keep it simple for you because you're an idiot. And I think that's why there was such an uproar. I mean, the response was thousands of people got behind this.
There's a petition, yeah.
Yeah, and I think in excess of 100K now.
Yeah.
And we've got our U-turn, am I right about that?
In what way?
Well, the BBC are not going to get rid of these recipes now, are they? They will be available to us.
As I say, my understanding from the last bit about it was that, yes, they were going to be moved over. because I think it just would cost them money to actually get rid of what's there already. Mm. And effectively, those recipes, they've already paid for them, ergo with our money.
With the license fee.
Yeah,
money.
So.
What do we think, Tiernan? I mean, is this whole thing just. Do you smell a rat here? Is this more BBC bashing?
I think it's. Yeah, I think there's endless BBC bashing at the moment. I think the. You know, I just think that it is renowned around the world as one of the very best broadcasters. And even though the white paper or the Royal Charter that came out last week wasn't as bad as we expected it to be, it's still essentially saying BBC have to try harder, appeal to everyone and do all this stuff, but you have to make big cuts, which means you can't do half that stuff. Mm. And I suppose cynically, I sort of think the BBC will then fail to do some of that stuff and then they can say, right, you don't deserve the licence fee, we'll take it away from you. You know, it feels like part of the endless plans to privatise everything. But, I mean... At the same time, you know, I think there are bits of the BBC that are, you know, I think some people are paid ridiculous amounts in the BBC.
Well, I know,
Stop giving Chris Evans money. Yeah. And, you know.
Well, Chris Evans, to his credit, did say, pay us so much then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although when he said that, I thought this was a bit of canny PR advice after all of the stuff around Chris and his temper and being a bit of a monster to work with. And I think.
Flashing, I do.
Really? That is that the allegation?
That was one of them, yes.
Well, he has been back in the day in his previous incarnation when he's on the Radio 1 Breakfast Show. He did have this thing where they'd be like, oh, we've got to go to work naked or something.
Yeah.
It's interesting. He's really, psychiatrists would need to unpick that one.
Maybe that's what you need to do, Mark, for this to go worldwide.
Do you know what? I think I need to basically become Chris Evans. I need to allegedly yell at producer Adam. But you see, I couldn't do that because he's actually like... bigger than me. I think he can actually beat me up, so that wouldn't work. See, that's because I'm a wimp. But I mean, look, I wonder whether, because the government, you know, are clearly, you know, I mean, your suggestion, really, Jody, is that perhaps successive governments have been giving the BBC a hard time, whether it goes back to the Blair years
it
and
does.
The Hutton Inquiry.
I mean, exactly what we were talking about before we came on air. Mm. There's always been a tug of war between whoever was in power and the BBC because it's such a massive organisation and it does have influence. And yes, it's not answerable to whoever's in power. So I think there's always that element of...
But here's the thing, right? I've got a silver bullet for the whole thing, which is that if the BBC funded itself and didn't come out of a tax which is raised by the state, then the BBC could have independence. So maybe the solution...
But you can't when you're commercial because you're then answerable to whoever's advertising with you.
And also, if you look at Channel 4, which is a public station, but it's funded by the adverts it puts on, the government still want to make cuts to that to make it more fair to, you know, its competition. Yeah. Which is ridiculous because really, I mean, to be competitive to Channel 5, you just need to put on anything with lights that moves. So, you know, how do you stop that from happening?
Apart from the forthcoming series, The Funny Thing About, which I'm in. But yes, but you know what? There's an exception to every rule and point taken. But yeah, so I think, I mean, we love the BBC. We were discussing it last week, though, which is that... I mean, I passionately adore the BBC, and I think you're right. Like, along with the NHS and our universities and our schools, it's one of the great sort of things about being British is the BBC.
Especially when you go abroad.
Yeah.
Because a few years ago, I did indeed work for the BBC, and it is quite amazing the reaction of people. And everyone's heard of it. Doesn't matter whether you're in Thailand, if you're in the Caribbean, if you're in Central America. Everybody knows the BBC.
Well, it was that, you know, just the other week, everyone saying happy birthday to David Attenborough.
Yeah.
And then announcing it in Parliament, Prime Minister's Question Time, happy birthday to David Attenborough, and then talking about BBC cuts. And you go, well, we wouldn't have had him without that. And he caused the BBC to be what it is. You know,
if you look at the essence of what the BBC is supposed to be, it's sort of positive discrimination for more creative, less commercial content, isn't it? That's, you know, in a sense that elsewhere, Channel 4, ITV, Sky, it's sink or swim, isn't it? If the show doesn't rate, it's gone. And the BBC's in a position to do something quirky and uncommercial, which might be a hit. I mean, what's really interesting is that success in broadcasting, and indeed making money in broadcasting, is quite counterintuitive. A good example is The Office. The Office couldn't have been a less commercially compelling show. It was a terrible idea.
And the fact that he said, this is only getting made if I'm in it.
Well, that's
and
right.
People didn't know who he was.
No,
then.
And John Plowman, who knows a thing or two about comedy, said, look, Ricky, we love you. I love the script. But I really think you're going to need to put Martin Clunes in this or someone we've heard of, you know. And Gervais, to his credit, said, no, he's a deal breaker. I'm in it all, which is amazing because he needed the money at the time. And there you go, that's a great artist. But the BBC was did not jump off the page. And in fact, it went out. And the controller of BBC Two, Jane Root, she watched it and said, sorry, I don't get it. It's not for me. So she buried it in the ratings, buried it in the schedules, and it went out in August. Well, then it was repeated just to fill a slot, and it was on the repeat run that it caught the attention of chattering classes in Soho, and the rest is history. Now, that show's gone on to make millions. Top Gear, the same. So, therefore, you do need that sort of non-commercial logic of the BBC as part of the broadcasting ecosystem, mm-hmm. don't you?
Definitely.
That's the thing. And ironically, the BBC makes a lot of money from its content, even though it's not supposed to be commercial. But I just wonder whether in government policy they need to sort of push BBC more in that direction, and whether it needs to wean itself off this tax, which we call the licence fee. Because, you know, it's difficult, isn't it? Do you have Netflix?
Yes, I do have Netflix, and I love it.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. And, I mean, I also, I mainly watch things on the iPlayer.
Yeah.
And Netflix, and then online. That's what I watch a lot of TV on now, some stuff on Channel 4. I mean, I think the thing that I'd say about the licence fee is it does ensure that the BBC is impartial, and I think that's really important. You know, we don't want a state-controlled broadcaster. We've got so many broadcasters that are controlled by, whether it be Rupert Murdoch or whatever else, you know, that have a voice to them, and especially now with things like the EU referendum and things like that coming up, you need a broadcaster that's completely impartial.
Yeah.
And the best
way
to make that impartial is that the public are funding it.
Yeah.
Entirely. They're not even, you know... betrothed to adverts or companies in any way. Nothing has to be sponsored by a company, so they have to give a certain line. And I think that's really good.
How about this, though, Jodie?
Yes.
What was your point? Because I reckon it's better than my question.
I was just about to say, I don't know if anybody had the misfortune to have ITV on just before it was the Queen's birthday party the other day. And they had this sort of intro advert to the whole thing that was a load of different brands together. So you had, I don't know, Catherine Jenkins singing Happy Birthday whilst being served a cup of Thai food tea.
Lovely.
And then there was the Admiral from the Admiral insurance advert checking out the street party. I mean, it was
just
a version of hell. And that's what happens if you don't have public funding.
I'd assume the Queen's favourite insurance is Admiral, though.
Exactly.
I'd assume that.
There you go. Okay, well, these are all very, very good points. You're listening to Mark Dolan Eats the News, sponsored by 7-Up. The time is 12:22. We'll be back with more big stories of the week. And I'm going to, in the light of BBC Foodgate, I'm going to ask my guests for their recommended recipe of the day, and we can all scurry home tonight after work and have a go at Tin and Dewey Ebb's lasagna, which sounds like a euphemism.
I'm not going to pick a lasagna.
I don't think it is. Brilliant. We've got more to come. What we'll do, though, in the meantime, is we'll enjoy some Sex Pistols' God Save the Queen.
Regime, a major moron, potential hate bomb.
There you go. Now, that was the Sex Pistols' God Save the Queen. You see, this show isn't just thrown together because we are here to talk about the big stories of the week. And the biggest political story of the week has to be the Queen's speech, which is essentially Jodie Thompson from the Huffington Post. It is the Queen having to read out the highly politicised bile of whichever government is currently in power. I mean, that poor woman has made so many announcements that didn't work, never quite came off, were a terrible idea, that she's got to do it with equal neutrality every time.
Yeah, and what I really loved watching it yesterday, she does give great side eye. Actually, at certain points,
this is so
Liz
good.
Is just like, yeah, like this. But I must big up my colleague, our comedy writer Ryan Barrell. Actually, he wrote a little piece about it yesterday. Woman in £1 million hat tells country to live more frugally.
Was that his?
Now that's gone viral.
Nice. It was on my phone just this morning.
Yes,
and I just in between browsing adult websites, I saw it, and I was I thought that was genius.
Yes, absolutely.
£1 million hat. It's like
That's the absolute thing that cracks me up.
Isn't
£1 million
the essence of the joke writing, of which you are a total expert, Tin and Dooyeb, which is, it's not really the joke, it's the choice of words, isn't it?
It's absolutely the choice of words, and the doing it in as few words as possible as well, which is fantastic.
Yeah, gorgeous, gorgeous. So that's right, she does the side eye, and also she's taken now, for example, there was a bit about all schools being academies, and she actually just turned around and went, really? All schools? Really? Which no one really picked up on, which I think is amazing. She was upstaged, or at least the whole government were upstaged, by none other than Dennis Skinner, who is our nomination for Legend of the Week. Every week on the show we have a Legend of the Week, and I don't think that there are any rivals to that this week.
No.
Because the process of the Queen's speech, it's archaic, isn't it, Tiernan? Right. And there's like all of this business with the what do
black
we call
rod.
The black rod which is not a man, is it? It's not a man of like African descent. Black rod is an actual, what is it? Because that sounds like someone that used to drink in my dad's pub in the 70s,
right,
is all I'm saying. But
it's just he has to knock on the door,
Robert
doesn't
Peel,
he,
by the way,
before the Queen arrives.
So is Black Rod a thing? Is it a rod?
He's a man.
Oh, it is a man.
He is a man.
And is he black?
No,
but he has
called
got
rod?
A black rod.
He's got a black rod.
Don't you think that we've got the resources to find a man who is a black man called Rod to do it?
Yeah, but that would mean diversity in the House of Commons. We're
not having that.
We can't have the next thing, they'll have a woman doing it. So Black Rod, he's then got the mace. That's the one I was going to call it, the mace.
Yeah.
Now, the mace is this rather grand gold stick. It's a sort of sabre. It's a, well, it's, God
it's
knows what it is.
Yeah.
It is a rod, isn't it? And it's. Do you know the function of the mace in the House of Commons? That gold thing. It sits there all the time.
It's
between the two dispatch boxes, in the foreground, so you can see it. And what it is?
To swipe away peasants.
Yes, it is. correct. It's to keep the poor out of the chamber, because they're all allergic to gold. We know that.
That's it.
No, what it is it's there to represent the Queen's presence.
I did not know that.
No, because the Queen can go anywhere she goddamn likes, except the House of Commons. She's not allowed in there.
She's not a commoner.
Wow. They should totally replace that with a little hologram of the Queen.
Wouldn't that be better?
Just waving constantly.
I agree. And tutting, giving side eye and saying, really?
Yeah, that would be
perfect. We should invade Iraq again.
Mm. I've got a little solar-powered Queen that just waves.
Have you?
Yeah, maybe they could just use her.
Think of the money we'd save if we just invested in a hologram of the Queen. It's a bit like in the West End when you've got like a big production and that Liam Neeson is sort of just appears three dimensional.
Imagine how sad Charles would be when he still couldn't take to the throne because the hologram Queen was reigning.
Yeah, that's
long after his mum had passed away.
Like one of those holograms, you know, at the escalators at King's Cross, warning you that you're just about to get on the escalator, like you don't know.
I think that would be perfect.
Brilliant.
So the Queen had the Queen's speech. We'll go through some of the detail of it shortly, but there was an incident before that, and there's a pause in which Black Rod is banging on the door and God knows what he's doing, and there's just like a lull of 10 seconds, and Dennis Skinner, the veteran Labour MP, said the following. What did he say?
He said, hands off the BBC.
Amazing. And then everyone sort of laughed and cheered and applauded.
Because he's got a massive history of this. And I've actually got together a collection of some of Dennis Skinner's greatest hits during the Queen's speech. So, I mean, some of them are quite political, but some of them are just really, really funny. So one of my favourites, in 2006, and this is in reference to Helen Mirren playing the Queen, he shouted, have you got Helen Mirren on standby?
Oh, genius.
That's lovely.
2001, this was the new Black Rod, Sir Michael Wilcox. He shouted out, "You're nout but a midget."
Oh, that's wow. Hilarious.
And yeah, so it goes on. Another one to the Queen, "Tell her to pay a tax." And 1990 to Black Rod. And this again was a reference to the ad at the time that was on the telly. "I bet he drinks Carling Black Label."
Brilliant. Yeah.
I really like the one
amazing.
About Royal Mail. What was it? Royal Mail to was it Royal Mail for sale? Queen's Head to be privatised. Was that?
Yes.
Brilliant.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was.
That's
great. Says here 2013.
Yeah.
Yeah. He could really put us out of work, that man, couldn't he? If he decided to go professional, Tiernan.
Could indeed.
I suppose he's just that rare thing, which is he's a politician that doesn't appear to have an agenda. He doesn't have any cronies. He's just there fighting for his constituents and for what he considers to be right.
Mm. And wasn't it Dennis Skinner as well that actually picked up the mace once and got
yes,
into
I think
big
he did.
Trouble for that?
He did, yeah, he's constantly, I mean, he's a, yeah,
he's
a naughty boy.
He's been suspended from Parliament 10 times right. For unparliamentary language and behaviour.
Well, he got removed recently, didn't he, for calling David Cameron Dodgy Dave?
Yeah.
Oh, which is brilliant. Right. I mean, I did think if you're going to get removed, you could have called him something far more vicious.
Well, and
I
know.
I'd have gone for a different choice of words if I knew I was going to get kicked out.
And how come he got removed for that and yet Emily Thornberry mouthing bollocks yesterday was okay.
Oh,
apparently.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. It's all happening. It's
she
all kicking
it,
off.
She mouthed it twice.
Well, we have a little guide to you. It's a kind of Dolan's idiot's guide to the Queen's speech. And courtesy of some help from the HuffingtonPost.co.uk, we've got four things in particular that the Queen's speech will tell us. First of all, that public services are under pressure. Government spending is being cut dramatically. So we kind of like have stopped talking about austerity, but it's there. The legacy of it continues, and it will for the rest of this Parliament. We're 6 years into a decade of austerity, and this is having a big effect on the funding of public services. Health services are under particular pressure. While the budget for the NHS in England is protected from austerity, social care and public health have been cut significantly, and it will be cut further for the next few years. And social care involves helping old people, which keeps them out of hospitals. So in a way, it's a crazy catch-22 which it costs us money anyway.
And I would disagree as well when they say that the NHS isn't being affected by austerity. Mm. On a purely personal level, it's going terribly wrong. I had appointments. I've got problems with my back, la la la. Mm. And I was told I needed to go to the pain clinic.
All right.
Which, you know, I think I had their first album in... Anyway.
yeah, they're brilliant. They were... Unfortunately, the drummer died.
Yeah.
But they were
that
great.
That often happens with drummers, doesn't it? Anyway, so that was in February, and I got my appointment in August.
No, you've got to be joking.
Yeah, and they just cancelled it last week and put it back to the end of September.
That's obscene.
Well, you know, it's okay, because I'm okay, but I just worry about, you know, the old lady that doesn't know what to do with herself because she's in so much pain. And what about her? So it is being affected by austerity, whether they say so or not.
I was going to say that part of austerity measures was to freeze nurses' pay, mm-hmm. and that means that there's understaffing of nurses. There aren't enough nurses on wards at the moment. There aren't enough, with all the junior doctor strikes and all that issues, that there may not be enough doctors fairly soon. Also, I think something to note is that the NHS budget is supposedly protected, but it's never raised enough to deal with the rising costs of medical supplies, which are constantly going up all the time. And so the NHS is always at a losing battle.
And it's worth reminding yourself, because, I mean, I'm you know, I'm politically very neutral. I sort of vacillate all over the place depending on who I agree with. But the NHS, everyone knows it's a no-brainer. My favourite fact about the NHS is it's the best value. For any government, it's the best value health service on the planet. Mm-hmm. And it's because it's so simple, because there's just one client, one buyer, which is the NHS. And therefore, the buying power is massive, and it's very coherent. And it's still, on paper, the most brilliant idea, and we're lucky to have it. But we have to be careful that it's not just sort of eaten away at the sides.
I think that's already started, hasn't it?
I guess it has. I mean, I don't know whether... Here's the thing. Do we need to sort of change our relationship with the NHS in order to make it more sustainable? Because the truth is that money doesn't grow on trees, does it? It is a bit of a money pit. I just wonder whether, you know, your anecdote about an important appointment which had been pushed back to autumn, which is a shocking thing. But do you not sometimes see abuse of the NHS and think that's why your suffering is because of others taking it for granted?
Yeah, possibly. You know, the people who go in and want antibiotics because they've got a cold, for example, that sort of behaviour. And also, I do think they've made mistakes before, you know, dabbling in alternative therapies, which have since been, you know, totally disregarded.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, by and large, I don't think people do abuse it because I think they value it
okay,
too much.
Are people abusing it by not looking after themselves is another big question. Well, I mean, that's like, is that question of civil responsibility? A really good example is, you know, going out on a Friday night, getting absolutely slaughtered and winding up in A&E, which just costs the NHS billions at the end of the year. Just dealing with self-inflicted, emergencies.
I mean,
you and I obviously wouldn't work if people didn't get drunk on Friday night.
That is very true. I very much need them. If anything, they're helping the economy, especially my own personal economy.
I mean, if you've had three or four WKDs, you'll find almost anything funny.
Mm. Yeah, which helps me really out. Helps me out a lot as well. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think it's all part of the whole... You know, if the education system wasn't in danger, people might learn to look after themselves better. If the health service overall was in a better condition so it could see people on time, then, you know, people maybe wouldn't run themselves to ruin. I think it's part of a whole system of failure that is caused by things that came in way before this government, last government, you know, PFI schemes that buy, you know, hospital trusts that loan money to hospitals and leaves them in debt. And, it's been running for years, running down the system. And actually, really, the best thing they could do, if they kept the NHS going, it is a money pit, but they're cutting taxes for corporations, things that tax money would help the NHS. You keep the NHS going, you keep a healthy country going, that country works better.
Yeah,
work really good more point. And keep that economy going.
Absolutely.
And the government
a virtuous circle.
Absolutely.
And whichever government's in power also makes a very good job of taxing the likes of alcoholic beverages and cigarettes, which that money then does go into the NHS. So,
well, there you go. We've also got a couple of other things that I should mention that have come out of the Queen's speech. Academisation is still happening. In the March budget, the Chancellor announced that all schools would have to become academies by 2022. About a quarter of the 22,000 state schools in England are academies or becoming them. The rest are under local authority control. Since the announcement, opposition to the proposal has come from teachers' unions, head teachers, basically everyone. The government has retreated and said that while it still wants all schools to become academies, it will only force schools that are failing or are in areas where most schools are already academies to make the change. Now, there's a wider sort of political hue to this, isn't there, Jodie? Because the same thing's happening with the prisons now. Prisons are not going to become academies. That would be a bit weird, wouldn't it? When I think of an academy, I for some reason think of people singing and stuff. I don't know why. This is just like a sort of weird fame academy for bad people. But Justice Secretary Michael Gove has proposed that a fifth of courts are going to close. But also what they're going to do is allow prison governors to manage their own prisons with no interference from central government. And they've got a budget and then they can use that as they see fit. And one of the proposals is, for example, prisoners could work during the week and then go into jail at the weekends, which is quite amazing. I mean, the focus, I suppose, is getting criminals to have something that resembles a normal life so that when they get out, they don't go back to crime.
It's more like the Norwegian system, isn't it? But I don't understand why you do that, make them go back at the weekend. And after all, you know, the whole point of rehabilitation within prison is... prisoners do work and they do learn new skills. There's a fantastic scheme in Brixton where they've been cooking and open a restaurant and then they go out and they've got all of these skills they didn't have beforehand. So, but the thing that I don't understand, the fifth of courts to close. So that just means loads of people are going to be on remand for longer, which surely is going to cost more money anyway.
Yeah, but what they're going to do is... Judge Judy is gonna
with Judge Rinder as well.
Judge Rinder is going to be a show in the morning and a show in the evening, and he's going to take real criminals, so they don't have to cast these wacky characters anymore. He's just going to deal with bad people all day long, and it'll be live and it will be on television. I can't see any problems with that. But yeah, you're right. The court thing is obviously a little questionable, isn't it? I mean, that's heaving under pressure. I mean, do you sometimes just think the country is in a like permanent state of crisis?
Yeah, definitely. We're in a total mess.
And is any country not?
I don't know. It's tricky because, I mean, I always look at
Iceland. I'm just going to say Norway again.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, well, Norway's all right, but then their oil is disappearing, isn't it? So that their country's finances are going. But they've also invested all their oil money into people's pensions and health so that people for years to come will still benefit from the money they made. They're very sensible.
Yeah.
I was sort of thought of Iceland, but then they elected the government back in that caused the crash, and now they've just had to get rid of the Prime Minister, who's so. And they also, they've only got 320,000 people, so it's very easy to manage.
Yes,
there must
it.
Be somewhere that's
Canada,
Denmark.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, and Canada with their new Justin Trudeau, who's.
I'm getting a bit of overload on Mr. Trudeau. I think he's a bit too pleased with himself.
Okay, so it's the backlash starts here.
Yeah, now this I'm declaring
is,
it.
This is Justin Trudeau, who is a very young and handsome politician. He's being called the world's sexiest politician.
I bet Barack Obama's seething.
Oh, of course he is. Are you kidding? Absolutely. It makes you realise that actually, you know, the government's cuts here in this country, which are affecting a lot of poor people, would probably be easier to take if David Cameron was just a little sexier.
Yep. I so think I'm wondering. If Michael Gove didn't look like a ventriloquist puppet that's being cursed, I think we'd probably appreciate his justice cuts a little
so
bit.
So why don't we just, like, you know, those little thing, the makeover stuff they have on This Morning? Why don't we just put Dave through that? Take him to Topshop, get him in some skinny jeans. do something about that hair.
Or maybe bring back the gold lamé suit back into this conversation.
There you
as
go.
Well.
You see, a gorgeous reincorporation. You are listening to Mark Dolan Eats the News in the company of Jodie Morris, who is the blogs editor of the Huffington Post.
Thompson.
What did I say, Morris?
Yes.
Who the hell's Jodie Morris?
I don't know.
That's your dark alter ego. by the way, can I ask you, Jodie Thompson from the Huffington Post, what's the stat on Huffington Post? It's the most what?
We're the biggest English-speaking website in the world.
See, that's not shoddy, is it?
No.
And Tiernan Dewyeb is the biggest English-speaking comedian in the world, aren't you?
No, I wish I was. I am the biggest speaking English comedian in my flat.
There's a lot of words in your comedy.
Oh, you mean I speak the most English?
Yeah, you do. Well, there's tons of English in your shows. I've watched it.
I definitely do use a lot of English.
It's like literally, I mean,
just words everywhere.
It is good. Adjectives, noun central is what I thought your
pretty
last
much.
Edinburgh show.
Yeah,
I've never
yeah.
seen such a noun heavy show.
It's true. Nouns all over the show.
Disappointingly light on adverbs, which I know you're addressing this year.
I'm going to do a show that's entirely adverbs. Yeah,
and I do hope in your head you weren't capping up those nouns in the Germanic fashion because that really winds me up.
There you go. You see, this is just. Absolutely perfect. It's FUBAR Radio. Don't go anywhere. More of that kind of thing after Queens of the Stone Age, No One Knows. There's a Queen vibe here. I think, you know, you've probably worked it out by now. Don't go anywhere.
Oh,
Buenas tardes, señoras y señoritas. Aquí está el DJ Héctor Bonifacio Echeverría Cervantes de la Cruz Arroyo Rojas. Esta es la radio que sacó a toda la estación donde el rock vive y no muere. Vamos a escuchar un par de temas de Queens of the Stone Age. Primero vamos a escuchar First It Giveth. Qué música impresionante, temible y verdaderamente ahora. Van a ver, aquí va, aquí va, aquí va.
Radio presents
Screen Talk with Dan Clark.
Now movies are getting rebooted as TV shows, or that trend is continuing because both Lethal Weapon and The Exorcist are now becoming TV shows.
I mean, what makes it Lethal Weapon?
Because of the backstory of Riggs, I guess, because he's still the Lethal Weapon, he's still unhinged.
Right.
In this, he's a former Navy SEAL, so...
But surely in this day and age, they wouldn't let a Lethal Weapon on the police force. Wouldn't there be health and safety regulations?
Now, that would be a rubbish programme.
excuse me, can I just point out that...
Yeah, I'd like to be a cop. I'm afraid you're too unhinged. End credits.
Every Friday.
Screen Talk with Dan Clark.
From 12 p.m. on FUBAR Radio. Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
You're indeed listening to FUBAR Radio. Mark Dolan with you right through to 1 o'clock on the UK's largest ad-free online radio station. You can hear this show and indeed all of our shows in-app, online, and essentially you can also come to our studios and stand near the glass and just listen in. Any form of listening
is welcome.
Yeah, it's
right.
A bit creepy, isn't
Very
it?
Very creepy.
Just
yeah.
Wave at them and hope that they move on. Now first of all, I've been promising recipes as a result of the threat of the BBC Good Food Guide going down and all those brilliant simple recipes disappearing. So I'll give you my potato dauphinoise. All right, and what I'll do is I'll do it with a little music bed because I could think it could do with something just to enhance it a little bit. Now, potato dauphinoise is it's the kind of recipe which, well, when people eat it, they're like, how the hell did you do that? But it couldn't be more simple. You see, because there are some things like scrambled eggs which seem simple but are almost impossible to get right. But the potato dauphinoise is easy to do, and it tastes impossible to recreate. So what you have to do is you have to take a certain variety of potato. The key to any potato dish is what potato you have. And I'd recommend either the King Edward, which is a sort of very floury, fluffy texture of a potato. But my all-time favourite is the Maris Piper, which you can pretty much do anything with. You can boil it, roast it, mash it. And the rest. So what you have to do is you take your potatoes and you slice them very thinly. I think we're looking at something like 3 to 4 millimeters, and you just slice all the way through, cross section all the way through the potato, and you get a bunch of those depending on how many people. I would say you're looking at 3 potatoes per person because they're so delicious that it's a very carb rich unhealthy snack, I should point out, but it will wow your friends. So what you do is you boil those potatoes, so let's say 3 per person, but what you mustn't do is completely cook them through. So you parboil, which is essentially just to kind of shock them in the boiling water for 3 minutes, and then you get them out and drain them and let them cool down. In another pan, you get some butter or some olive oil, depending on your preference. I'd recommend butter. And you crush some garlic into the butter and gently simmer it without burning the garlic. And once the garlic is just beginning to turn a kind of darker yellow brownie, once it's sort of caramelizing, you then just take approximately 500 ml of single cream. Single cream. Then some... Then you need a bit of salt and pepper. And if you are somebody that enjoys a little spicy bite, then I would recommend that you slice about 3 or 4 thin slices of chili into this sort of mix with the cream. Then what you need to do is you need to lay out those potatoes into a wide, quite open sort of dish, which is non-stick, so that you've probably got maybe 3 or 4 slices of potato across the whole surface of the area. So it's kind of stacked up, sort of graduated up. And then what you do is you pour that gorgeous creamy mix over the top. And you might want to lift some of the slices of potatoes so that the cream kind of sneaks in between the gaps. Then I would shave some Parmesan over the top, slam it in the oven for 25 to 30 minutes until it's golden brown at the top, but still nice and moist and a little bit creamy inside. And that is potato dauphinoise, and it will change your life. Now, first reaction to my friends there from my potato dauphinoise recipe suggestion.
I mean, I think you're wasted on a news show. Yes. I don't know why you're not doing an hour cookery show.
And also, who knew how well cookery works on the radio where you can't see it? Because what you guys listening don't realise is that I've just made a potato dauphinoise while describing it.
Smells great.
So, yeah, if you want to try it in your
sure
own time.
I'm not sure about the chilli, though.
Yeah, you're not feeling the chilli?
I think I might add a few little bits of thyme, but I don't think I'd add chilli. Well.
Okay, there you go. Would you eat my potato dauphinoise?
I would, yes.
Do we have meat eaters here?
I eat fish, not meat.
Fish?
I'm a veggie.
You're a veggie, all right. Well, then this will be lost on you guys, which is that what's really nice in potato dauphinoise is sort of like a rack of lamb or something, which is a bit pink in the middle, because the blood from the lamb sort of mixes with the cream from the potato dauphinoise. But you're not feeling that,
no,
so we'll just draw a line under that. By the way, speaking topically, I believe it's National Vegetarian Week this week.
It is this week.
Well, there you go.
As well as Mental Health Awareness Week.
Well, there you go. The two could be... in some ways combined. You're a vegetarian. Why are you a vegetarian?
Sort of laziness. I was brought up as a vegetarian from day one, but my parents are vegetarians and I can't be bothered to change.
Right.
Really?
The idea of eating meat would just be so wrong, wouldn't
it?
Yeah,
I don't like the idea that it was once running around happily regurgitating in a field. But, you know, similarly, when I hit 30, I thought I'll try meat and just see, because everyone always said you'd eat it if you knew what it tastes like. And I tasted it and went, oh, I'm not really that bothered.
Yeah.
Apart from chorizo, that was great, but there's now a really good veggie chorizo that's amazing. So
oh, really?
I don't need to find that.
And how about fish? Same issue.
They've got a face. I don't eat things with a face, apart from smiley potato shapes.
Okay. Yes, this is good to know. And Jodie, you are a fish eater. Can you imagine going vegetarian?
I was vegetarian before I started eating fish again. So I've got foot in both camps.
Well, it's common knowledge that the production of meat is one of the worst things for the planet, because there are just so many billions of litres of water involved, pollution. Methane from the cows is worse than air travel. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's got a bigger footprint. In fact, I mean, driving your car is almost virtuous compared to having a burger. Did you know that car emissions are responsible for 1% of world pollution is from cars? So air travel and the production of energy, and most importantly farming, are the worst. So we could probably solve all the world's problems immediately by going veggie,
or else get cows to be taxi drivers.
Well, now you see, that's a nice idea. I do like that, because there are some reptiles out there as taxi drivers, but I've never seen livestock in an Uber taxi.
Could you propel a plane using cow farts?
Well, it's not a bad shout, is it? Should we try that next week?
Yeah. I'm just
Let's
wondering.
Do that. But it's interesting. It's not going to happen, because my bacon sandwich has just arrived, drizzled in HP sauce. So maybe next week. Now, we need to finish things up. Let's finish on an embarrassing note, because a couple of stories have floated around this week that involve public ignominy. First of all, one of the viral phenomena of the week has been a wedding singer who loses his false teeth during the performance and then simply carries on singing. Someone picks them up and he whips them back in. What a pro.
5 second rule.
It was the 5 second rule. Meanwhile, Jeremy Corbyn gives David Cameron the cold shoulder and completely ignores his overture for a bit of a conversation during the Queen's speech. There's always a bit where they kind of have to go into Parliament together, and they sort of, even if they're sworn enemies, they always find a couple of minutes to be civil with each other. That didn't happen on this occasion. Corbyn wasn't having any of it. So, public embarrassment, has it happened to you? I mean, Tiernan, our jobs as comedians,
it's kind of
embarrassing anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, somebody asked me recently, what's the worst gig you've ever had? And I was like, well, I've got about 15, at least. And then there's at least, 30, 40, 50 more that are nearly as bad. But you stop caring after a while, you know. I mean, only last October I did a show in Blackwood Miners Institute, and I did 30 minutes to complete silence.
Wow.
To an audience that didn't even applaud me as I walked on. So they hated me before I even appeared.
Yeah, I wouldn't take it personally.
I just got in the car, I went home and went, oh, well. there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know what it, with those ones, you just have to think of the money and just plough on, don't you?
Yeah.
You're quietly writing the invoice in your head as you die a deadly death. How about you, Jodie? I would imagine you're just such an elegant lady. I can't imagine anything awkward happening to you ever.
Oh, mine was quite a while ago when I was at university. I was and still am a massive Nick Cave fan, and he played a gig, and I was at the after show in the bar, and I had kind of crazy hair at the time, and he tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Gee, how do you do your hair?" And I turned round and I was so starstruck, I just said, with the accent of Paul Daniels, "It's magic."
Right.
And he just turned round on his white winkle pickers and walked off.
Yes, I think he made a good decision on that occasion. That's crushingly awkward, isn't it?
Wow. Yeah. I didn't even know who Paul Daniels was.
But the thing is, when you're around the celebrity, you never know what to say, do you? Do you know what I mean? It's just an inherently awkward thing because you know them, they don't know you. It's not ideal. This show has been the opposite of awkward. Thank you so much for being here. We'll see you soon. Jodie Thompson and Tiernan Dewia. It's been a treat. Keep it FUBAR. Don't go anywhere. We'll eat more news next week. We'll play out with the Beatles.
Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. I need to laugh. And when the sun is out, I've got something I can laugh about. I feel good in a special way. It's a sunny day. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. We take a walk. The sun is shining down. Burns my feet as they touch the ground. Then we lie beneath the shady tree. I love her and she's loving me. She feels good, she knows she's looking fine. I'm so proud to know that she is mine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine.